Yogi Berra once gave this piece of sage advice: when you get to the fork in the road, take it. And so today we ask, which way should we grow our food? Our way or nature's way?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 1384th edition of the Food Chain Radio Show and podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends up there in Montreal who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, this from Dr. Felix Lowenstein's new book, Food Crash, under the subtitle, The Conflict, Intensive Chemical-Based Industrial Agriculture versus Organic Farming. It is also clear to me, and I'm quoting here, it is also clear to me that if you work for a market whose food prices allow a population to spend only 10% of their income on food, you must take every opportunity to save on unit costs. You can't produce wheat using organic farming methods and sell it for conventional price. It is even less possible with pigs or eggs. There is no mistake. You either farm in one system or the other. And yet, we must have the discussion. We must be allowed to question whether what we have heretofore considered guaranteed and correct will still be sustainable in the future. And if it no longer does, we must talk about transformation processes. Together, we must explore how we can transform a system that is not sustainable enough into a state that leaves opportunities for future generations. Opportunities that are as good as those we have found and that can help people, regardless of whether they live here or on the other side of the world. I ask you for this openness and this willingness, will it, and be it with a skeptical frown, to follow me. I would like to make the claim that you can do in the organic way that which is no longer possible in the long run with what we call today conventional. And that leads us back to our question of the day. Which way should we grow our food? Our way or nature's way? Well, here to help us find an answer from the other side of the world, Germany, we have Dr. Felix Lowenstein, who is the author of Food Crash, Why Organic is the Only Way Forward. Dr. Felix, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello, thank you very much for having me.
Well, now, the quote I read from your book, Food Crash, most likely would have sounded much better in German.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, the German version has the English title, Food Crash.
Oh, okay.
It's just another subtitle saying that if we don't feed ourselves organically, we won't feed ourselves at all, which is
That indeed is a crash then, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is. And I mean, look around on this globe and you will find enough people where the food crash is already daily reality. People who do not have enough to eat.
Or
food system crashed already.
Yeah, or perhaps they have too much of the wrong things to eat too.
I mean, there are many reasons why people do not have enough food. And when you look closely at it, you won't find many places where there's not sufficient production.
Right.
The main reasons are wars and not enough income, as a matter of fact. So it's access to food more than the availability of food.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this. You're an author, but you're also a farmer, right?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I'm not a farmer anymore because I'm lucky enough to have a daughter who took over the farm together with her husband some 10 years ago.
Oh.
I had been farming for almost 30 years on that farm.
Okay, well, would you tell us about that farm? Because though you are not farming on it, your daughter and her husband are, which means you are too.
Yes, that's a bit true. The farm has been in our family for the last 500 years.
Just 500 years, huh?
It's quite a time, isn't it? And which means you feel a lot of responsibility when you take it over from your father, which I did back in 86. And I had a training as an agricultural scientist at Munich University, and then took over the farm and started the way everybody did around here. That's what's called conventional, the convention to do it. And I transformed it, I converted it to organic in 1992. And since this is an organic farm.
You know, when I wrote the introduction, I called it our way or nature's way, because I think we are the ones who invented what we're now considering conventional farming, and nature invented the other way. So I put it on the table as our way or nature's way. And I'm thinking what you're talking about is nature's way, which is what you're working on, as opposed to a more conventional way, which is the way that we ended up with these giant farms made possible by the economies of scale using chemicals and machinery and whatnot. So now that we have an idea where you're coming from, let's start with your food crash. But before we do, I think you're going to be warning us of big dangers ahead. But before you do, I'd like to make mention of a 1968 book by Paul Ehrlich published under the title The Population Bomb, in which he claimed the world would run out of food by 1970s, and there was nothing anybody could do about it. And the population at Paul Ehrlich's time that he published The Population Bomb was 3.5 billion people. Today it's 8.2 billion people, and we're still plugging along, and there hasn't really been a population bomb to the extent that Ehrlich said there would be. So when you come along with the notion of the food crash, are you not kind of barking up that tree that Paul Ehrlich barked up on?
I don't think I am, because first of all, I'm convinced that we will be able to produce enough food for an even growing global population. But it has a precondition. And the precondition is that the very production basis of what we are doing when we produce food is preserved. This means fertile soil. It means functioning biodiversity, functioning ecosystems as a whole, including climate and water and whatnot. The thing is, the way we did it up to now, the way we exploded our production, put in jeopardize these preconditions. And when I say food crash, I mean if we continue to destroy these very bases of our food systems, there will be a crash, because we won't be able to do it anymore. And if you consider, for example, that we destroyed, as mankind, one third of our fertile soil since World War II, you see the path we are on. And we cannot make good for that by just intensifying more and more and more. Because one of the main reasons for destroying was this intensification.
The intensification of chemicals and machinery and everything that we do to get as much as we possibly can out of the soil, correct?
Yeah. Yes. And my whole issue is to put against this technical intensification an organic or natural intensification, which means we have to find out how better to use nature's forces, to better use the functional principles of ecosystems and intensify those.
Okay.
Means, first of all, photosynthesis, means soil life. There's a whole of very complicated things about all that, but we can use it to produce our food.
I think I heard you mention that you have a degree in agricultural technologies from university, correct?
Yes, I do, from Technical University of Munich.
What kind of technology did they teach you?
I mean, when I left my university, I left it the same way most of students do leave their universities today or agricultural schools. In the firm belief that you cannot survive in hostile nature if not taken by both hands from Monsanto, Syngenta, Bayer, BASF, all those who help you to survive. And I tell you, Michael, I was convinced this is the only way I can survive. And it took me years to find out that there's another way. And funny enough, when I had converted, as after 6 years of conversion, my father, of course, observed what I was doing. And I had a wonderful father, a father who never, ever said a word about what I was doing. He was helpful whenever I asked him, but he let me do, which is really, I know how much chance I had to have such a father. But this was the first and only time when he said something. And he said, why are you doing things the way we did it the whole time? We were so happy to have left that behind us. And I was so glad that he lived long enough to realize that we were not returning to pre-industrial times, but that we did something very innovative, science-based, and successful.
Like many of our fathers, they look at their children going, where are you going? I guess it's pretty much the fact that we have to find our own way when it gets right down to it.
I mean, if you see that your children do it exactly the same way you did it, you should be concerned.
Yes.
They have to change things, of course.
And there it is. So it's just something that we have to do because did you have a sense that we're headed for trouble? Why did you make the leap? Did you have a sense that the way we were doing things was going to lead us in the wrong way?
It wasn't as spectacular at all. And there was no voice coming out of the sky to tell me, Felix, you have to call us. Nothing of that kind. My concern was I was dealing with pesticides.
Okay.
Because risk.
Let's hold that because you have to take a quick break. And when we come back, let's pick up pesticides and go from there. This is the Food Chain Radio Program, Michael Olson, with Dr. Felix Lowenstein and his book, Food Crash. We will be right back, so please stay tuned.
let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Dr. Lowenstein, I recently had a conversation with a beekeeper, a apiarist, a commercial beekeeper who tends to the bees at the California almond industry, actually. California produces 80% of the world's almonds. And to produce those 80%, you need bees. And his job is to provide the bees, getting the bees to be there when they need to be there. And I asked him toward the end of the conversation what he sees in the future for beekeeping. And he said, well, we're experiencing a situation in which there are fewer and fewer crops grown on larger and larger parcels of land, most of which use chemicals. So the bees are hard put because there's only one kind of food in this field that is planted fence row to fence row. There's only one thing, for example, it's just almond flowers, and that's all there is right now. And the crop is so intense that it's planted fence post to fence post, so there are no riparian corridors for natural plants to grow and for bees to forage for food. So there's less food and there's a lot more chemicals. And he said, then in the near future, another frightening thing that's coming to bear is the fact that genetic engineering is making it possible for almond trees to self-pollinate, and there will be no more need for bees. So this way of growing our food, I would call our way, because we invented it. But it doesn't bode well for bees. And since bees are responsible for one third of the food we eat, maybe we're in trouble too. Your thoughts?
I mean, and if you extend that to the food plants we have worldwide, there's two thirds depending on pollinators like bees. So if we create conditions that apparently allow us to continue the way we do it, because we can replace it by genetically engineered plants which do not need bees anymore, we destroy little by little entire ecosystems. And I mean, we have these numbers now. We lost two-thirds of our insects. And I'm talking not about species, but about biomass in the last 30 years. So this is an indicator of what's going on. And of course, insects are only just one part of the food chain, starting with the tiniest soil life. And then on the other end, it's us, human. Yes. So it's such an incredible idea that we would be able to make good with technique what we destroy in nature. And what we have to do is to find a system where we make use of natural forces as intelligently as we can be useful. And what we do in organic farming today, I don't pretend that we do it perfectly already. Not at all. We have to develop that further and further. But we took that path. You were talking about the crossroads, weren't you? We took that path. And the idea is to have a path going towards stable systems where we can use nature and where we do not need all these corrections the chemical industry is giving us for a high price.
Right. So the conflict, intensive chemical-based industrial agriculture versus organic farming. In a recent episode of The Food Chain, I hosted a fourth generation farmer from Saskatchewan who has 1,000 acres of crops way up there in the high prairies of Canada. And he suggests, no, he demands that it would be impossible to run his farm organically. It just simply can't be done. And that he's making a nice living up there farming our way, which is conventionally with lots of chemicals and machinery and very few people. Now, in fact, he even distributes glyphosate in bulk in a big giant tanker trucks to fellow farmers. So that's how conventional he is. But he's probably right, don't you think, that he could not do his farm organically because it's built upon the foundation of conventional agriculture technology.
I mean, I think that there's two elements in there. One is his mindset. And I know exactly what's going on in his head because it went on in my head as well. But 30 years back or more. As I said, because you cannot imagine brought up in the system that you can dare not to use chemicals. My thinking process started when we were beginning to produce herbs like chamomile. And we had this chamomile company or herb company who wanted us to produce chamomile for them without chemicals.
Oh.
And I remember standing on my field and saying, oh gosh, I mean, can that work? I didn't spray anything. How can something work? So this is one thing, it's the mindset.
Right. And it can't be done any other way, so don't even talk to me. Something like that, right?
Because you're frightened. I mean, in the first years in my wheat fields, I had a lot of thistles. And I was so ashamed of my neighbors pointing their fingers on my field that I went out in the evening to cut the thistles with an electric, how do you call these machines to cut hedges, you know?
Yeah.
Just because I didn't want them to see my thistle. I mean, that's the way you think. And you have to get rid of that. Mm-hmm. And you have to get used of the fact that your living room looks different from your wheat field. Because it's more tidy in your living room, I mean.
Right.
So that's one thing. But the other thing is, when you are in that conventional system, you cannot just leave away chemicals and then you are organic. You will fail them. That cannot work. So you have really to change your entire system. Means more crop rotation, means maybe smaller fields or more structures in your landscape. And I don't know, well, there's a lot of things you have to change. And that needs knowledge. And knowledge that we don't get in our agricultural universities, in land grant or what's called in America. So you have to acquire that. And I tell you, it took me decades. I'm still in that process of learning.
Right.
And in the end, it means you switch from a recipe agriculture. You know what I mean? You go to your field, you look at your plants, you look up in that book, and maybe you even have an app for that now. And you see, this means there's this disease. And then I go to buy that chemical to spray it. You leave that system and you go into a system where you have to understand what a living system is, how it reacts, how it interacts. I don't want to frighten anybody. This is not rocket science.
Right.
It means you can learn that. And when you do it, and let me say that, Michael, when you do it, it's a lot of fun. I have a good friend who runs a really big farm, something like 2,500 hectares acres, which is big in our premises, and who converted to organic 5 years ago. And I met him recently, and he said, you know, the only thing I really regret is that I didn't start earlier.
Wow. There it is. Well, you suggest that we have no choice because there's going to be a food crash. Why, give us a thumbnail of why you believe there's going to be a thumbnail of why there's going to be a collapse, excuse me, and that can our way of doing things, conventional way of doing things, is not going to sustain us. Why is this a must do? Why is there going to be a food crash?
Because even if we forgot about that, and even if we don't see it, we are, as humans, part of living ecosystems. And we depend on the functioning of these ecosystems. You mentioned before the bee problem. That shows it very, very understandably. So if we, with open eyes, destroy these ecosystems, in the end, we won't be able to produce food in them anymore. And I tell you, I've been to the east part of Washington State last year, at the border of Iowa. The area is called Palouse.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen anything like that in my life. I mean, hundreds and hundreds of square miles, just bare soil. It was September, so most of the crop was harvested. Nothing green anymore. And even the tiny little rivers had disappeared because they were drained. And I talked to two young farmers, both being big farmers, one something like 10,000 acres and the other 20,000. And both told me that their system is coming to an end because of acid soils, the soils becoming more acid, because of human weeds not controllable anymore. But both of them it was difficult for them to imagine how the other system would look like. And both of them were trying very shyly, very tiny plots to try organic farming. And they had the same surprise in their faces I had back then, that you can do it.
Uh-huh.
It's not impossible. And there's no place on earth where you cannot do it.
So I had a good friend who was very big in the strawberry industry back when organic was just becoming a label that people sought out here in California. He was worked for one of the big strawberry companies, or was part of one, actually. But I used to chide him a little bit about giving organics a try. And finally, one day he said, Michael, I set up an organic test plot. Come and see it. So I went out to his ranch, and lo and behold, he had a little section of land set aside for what he called organic farming. But what organic farming meant to him was simply no chemicals.
No.
And that was that. And no. I suggested that, well, that's where it starts, but that's only no. The beginning, right?
Exactly. And this is, we have our chemistry companies here in Germany. They set a program, which the name is something like Come and Look. So they ask conventional farmers to leave a plot of some square meters in their field where they stop the sprayer and they stop the fertilizer. And then there's a sign outside the field saying to the walker, the guy who walks by, this is what it looks when you make organic. And of course, there's weed and you're a weed and you don't see any crop anymore. But this is ridiculous because that's not what it is about.
So it's very interesting that The University of Minnesota did a study. We have a couple minutes left before our break, but University of Minnesota did a study on people's attitudes, and they found that 74% of people trust farmers, but only 24% of people trust food.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we should be aware that being farmers, that we have a high reputation and we can count on people's support for changes. And I think we should be bold enough to start with them. But there's no doubt. If politics don't help us with frameworks that make us earn money with preserving nature instead of earn money with destroying nature.
Are you suggesting that money might have a playing a factor in this transition?
Yeah, of course. And this is not limited to agriculture.
Okay.
This is our entire economy.
There you go. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Dr. Felix Lowenstein from Germany. So happy to have you here. He is the author of Food Crash, Why Organic is the Only Way Forward. Not a way forward, but the only way forward. So as Yogi Berra said, when you come to that fork in the road, take it. And Dr. Lowenstein is pointing to one way, and the other way is our way, which is to say conventional agriculture with lots of chemicals and whatnot. Dr. Lowenstein is the other way. And when we get back from this break, we're going to find out what that consists of. So do stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You can earn a substantial income by farming for the city. All you need to do is take your crop to market and win the competition for the consumer dollars. There is a well-proven strategy for winning this competition. You will find it embedded in MetroFarm, the guide to growing in or near the city for the city.
Port Ideas, Greg Williams.
There's a tremendous amount of useful information in MetroFarm for farming in or near the city.
Acres USA's Charles Walters.
MetroFarm tells how to convert an opportunity into a real going concern. Every chapter is organized around the logic of practicality. For every problem needing a solution, MetroFarm offers a progression of steps arranged in sequence so the desired goal is achieved.
Before you plant your seeds, pick up a copy of the Ben Franklin Book of the Year award-winning MetroFarm. Then plant your seeds and win the dollars. MetroFarm.com. MetroFarm.com.
We're on the farm with Joel Salatin.
Would you like to buy homemade soup, backyard chicken, and the neighbor's artisanal lunch meat? The Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund protects your right to acquire the food of your choice from the source of your choice. I'm Joel Salatin from Polyface Farm, and I urge you to defend the right of neighbors to engage in direct food commerce. Join today at farmtoconsumer.org. The food of your choice from the source of your choice. That's farmtoconsumer.org. Farmtoconsumer.org. Thank you.
When you buy local American-grown flowers, flowers will grow and flourish in America. Hello, I'm Deborah Prinzing, author of Slow Flowers for Certified American-Grown Flowers. When you buy local flowers, you're helping our country's family farms reduce the transportation footprint of flowers and enjoy fresher, longer-lasting bouquets. So please, next time you shop for flowers, think local. Think Certified American-Grown Flowers. Visit AmericanGrownFlowers.org to learn more.
History buffs, this tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place aboard the USS Dale during the opening moments, 7 December 1941.
As we left our berth and got underway, the deck force was still engaged in getting ready for combat. Fuller had the job of clearing the deck of all the wooden objects that had collected in port, so Fuller was making his way aft, just tossing stuff like a madman, when he came to the ice cream freeze. Before he could toss it over the side, one of the guys said, "Hey, wait a minute!" In a matter of seconds, the lock was broken and the ice cream distributed among the crew. So, what you saw that morning was the USS Dale steaming hell-bent out to the channel while the guys back aft were standing by their guns, eating ice cream and watching World War II break out all around.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Dr. Lorenstein, organic farming will not produce enough to survive. How's that? I have a better way.
I have a better way of an answer.
Okay, so we'll play that. We'll head in that direction, and then you can tell me how it's going to work. Okay, let's see. I'll set this. And okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back. Yes, we're talking food and how we should go about growing our food. Yogi Berra said when you come to the fork in the road, you have to take it. One fork leads to conventional agriculture. The other leads to organic agriculture. Can organic agriculture produce enough to feed our population? You know, whenever that question comes up, Dr. Lowenstein, I am taken to the book called Farmers of 40 Centuries by F.H. King, who was the Secretary of Agriculture here in the United States at the turn of 1900. As a matter of fact, he published his book. He went to Asia and checked out how did Asia feed itself? My goodness, because they didn't have any modern technology. And what he discovered at the time, there were 400 million people living in China, and they were all being fed from little tiny parcels of land. And that furthermore, people have been farming the same parcels of land for 40 centuries at least. So is that really the kind of thinking we need to start adapting to survive into the future? We have to go back and get that technology of what, regeneration?
I mean, the reason why this book, Food Crash, was written is because I thought so often, if not every time, when there's a discussion on organic farming, I've met the question, can you feed the world by that? Which is a bit ridiculous because nobody feeds the world. The world is feeding, the people are feeding themselves. But anyway, the question is not, it's important to answer that question. And as a matter of fact, it's a bit complicated. That's why I wrote this book, and to help myself and my readers to understand why there's an answer to that question. And one answer is, of course, we are not farming inorganic as we did 100 years ago. There's a lot of progress in breeding, for example, or breeds. There's a lot of progress in technology, machinery. So we have yields today in organic that are far higher than yields in conventional had been 50 years ago. Secondly, in the countries of the global south, and I could tell you examples of that if we have enough time, these smallholder farmers who are responsible for 60% of the world food production, they are able to produce more food with organic methods, which means more than just leaving away chemicals, of course. And the third thing, and this is very important, is the crucial question is not how much can we produce. The crucial question is, what do we with what we produce? So we waste half of the food we are producing. And this applies for the industrialized countries like America, like Germany. And if we have post-harvest losses or 50% of what we produce in Africa, for example, then you see where the real reserves are. The second thing is, in the European Union, 60% of the cereal production goes to animals. And I love meat. I'm not vegetarian, even though I respect vegetarians, of course. But I love meat. But there's no need to eat more meat than what the doctor tells you. Or the other way around, if we reduce our meat consumption to what would be good for our health, there's a huge lot of production available for even growing population. The thing, we use tremendous amounts of land to produce energy, like ethanol or biogas. And this is a very, very inefficient way to produce energy. And as soon as we will have developed other sources of regenerative energy, the way we can do it, and we are very far already, and to store it, then we won't waste land anymore to produce fuel. So if you put all this together, the capacity of what we can have in addition, just by treating what we are producing differently from what we are doing now, is enormous.
Now, I in the last segment, I quoted a survey by the University of Minnesota that claimed that 74% of people trust farmers and only 24% trust their food. It seems like consumers are of a mind to eat food that is grown in the organic way rather than the conventional way. So it would seem there would be an impetus for making the change you suggest. Yes, we want to eat good food. We want to eat food we can trust. So where does conventional agriculture start making this change? Where did you start when you made the change? What did you do?
I mean, what I did is I asked somebody who gave me advice to help me to make the transition. But I had also money from the state that helped me to make the transition. And I needed an association of organic farmers to market what I was producing. And these three things helped me starting. And I marveled on what I was doing because it was so different what I did before. And little by little, I developed a system which really was stable enough to economically and ecologically to work out.
Those two farmers that you met in Eastern Washington, what would you tell them? Or what would say, okay, you can see the future. You see what's going to happen. Well, you have to change. Here's a good thing to start with. What would you tell them?
The first thing I would like to do is to invite them to Germany and to show them big farms, real big farms in Eastern Germany, former communists, where we have these huge farms, to make them understand that there's no contradiction between having a big farm and doing organic. So, and then they wouldn't be able to see there. If you enrich your crop rotation, so you don't stick with two or three plants, but you have more than that. If you integrate maybe animal farming in your land by having sheep or something, even if we have sheep, but we do not have it on our own, but we have another who does it on our land. If you have access to markets, which is in America not difficult at all, because you eat much more organic food than you produce. So if you do all that, you will learn how to do the system, and it will work out. And as I said before, it will be great fun. Mm-hmm.
So it pretty much has to start with the soil.
Yes, of course. When I was farming commercially, the soil was for me such something, I hope this word exists, substrate. It's the matter where the plants grow in, and I feed the plants with biofertilizer, and if it gets sick, I lean it with my pesticide. What you have to learn is that the soil nourishes your plant. And that means you have to consider the soil being a living organism with billions of small and little animals and bacteria and viruses living in there and helping each other to sustain. And of course, we can use modern machinery doing a good job with our soil. But if we undo this good job by killing the soil life with pesticides, the soil will never get where we have to, where we need it to be to feed our plants. And so if the soil, once it's healthy, you will get healthy plants too.
It's really interesting because I posited this conflict that we're dealing with here today as a conflict between our way, which is that we become God of the soil when we kill the life in that soil. And then we have to become responsible for supplying all of the essential nutrients that the plants need. Now, I would argue, maybe I shouldn't be arguing, but I'm going to anyway, that we're not that smart. Only nature is that smart. And if we do, as you suggest, to amplify the life in the soil, then everything a plant needs will be there. And we don't have to decide what they need when they need it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And as a matter of fact, we are, as you say, we are not as smart. And when I was in Washington State at these farms, they told me they had a problem with some weed in their wheat. And the only solution they saw was to start canola planting, because there they could use GMO canola, and they could use Roundup to kill the weeds. And it's funny because there was a professor from Washington State University was with me, and he said they are chasing the rainbow, because you can cope with that problem for another couple of years, but then you will be at the end of that system again. So if you want to find a system that works on and on and on for future generations, you should stop to fight nature and start to use nature's forces, and you would be surprised how wonderful that works.
Or like those Chinese farmers of 40 centuries that had been farming on the same parcel of land for 40 yeah. centuries with no implements of modern technologies at all, feeding 400 million people. You know, the sad thing about China is that they've taken all those farmers and moved them into the city to work in factories. Yeah. And that yeah. incredible knowledge, that precious, precious knowledge is wasted on a factory floor. And now China is trying to figure out how to feed itself with our way, which is the conventional agriculture.
And nevertheless, on a very low basis, China starts to discover that their system isn't able to continue like that anymore as well. And organic farming is growing there as well. But if you look to India, India has an even bigger population than China now.
we have three states that have already gone to 100% organic. The last one is Andhra Pradesh. They have 55 million inhabitants, and they went that way. So it's not our luxury project of the global north, but it's the solution.
Well, it's quite a challenge you're throwing down to the world, Dr. Felix. With your book, Food Crash. But there's a real positive message in Food Crash as well. And that is, we can do this.
This is the case. And I had the privilege being the representative of the organic sector in Germany to meet some wonderful people, so incredible farmers who show the way, the path they go today, which can be the street for us all in the near future.
And it's fun, right?
It is great fun. Why, my daughter continued the stuff. I'm so glad she did, because it's one of the most privileged things you have as a farmer is the next generation continuing what you're doing.
Amen to that. Well, Dr. Felix Lowenstein, author of Food Crash, Why Organic is the Only Way. It's not a way. It's the only way.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.